shape but can't control these possibilities to grow. Weeds amongst the push and pull, waiting on the wind to take us. We can write with ink and pen, but we will sow with seeds instead. Starting with words we've said, and we will all be changed.
Where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. Per usual, I'm with my best friend in the entire world, Dave. Dave, hey.
Yo, what's up, man? I don't know if last time I should have picked this beef with you, but I'm remembering it this time. You called me out as not your best friend, thinking I would never listen to that episode. Sure did listen, though.
Yeah, and it was actually probably one of our best episodes, so...
I'm not gonna. That's true. I kind of want to hire that guy.
Yeah, Slippy at last. Go listen. It is with great pleasure today that we interview a guy. This is a band I've loved for a while. I saw them for the first time ever. I went to a conference called Catalyst, and I saw them play. I don't know what year, 2011, 2012, or something, and blew my face away. And that was about the only thing.
Boy.
That was basically the only thing I enjoyed about that conference. And then I left, and I've been following ever since. And Dave, I don't know if you know a ton about them, and I guess we'll find out. But I'm excited, and hopefully you're excited at home, to welcome Trenton from Seren to the show. Trenton, hello, my friend.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Do you
hey.
Do you remember that conference?
Of course I do. That was probably the largest audience we've ever played in front of.
It was I feel like it was a nice crowd. They were very attentive for being a stadium.
Yeah, we had played a show the night before in like Alabama, and we drove overnight and arrived at about 3:30 a.m. Loaded in, sound checked at about 5:30 a.m. Took an hour long nap, and then we opened the entire thing. At like 8 a.m., it was one of the most brutal things.
That sounds awful.
At 9 a.m.? I mean, 8 a.m., that's... Oh, boy, I can't imagine trying to do anything at that time. Especially
you played like an outdoor show like later on that afternoon, I feel like.
Yeah, after another longer nap.
Right. I feel like they really abused you guys that week. But I mean, it was great.
It was really great for us. I mean, it was fantastic. We did the Catalyst Dallas, and they dug it enough to ask us to come do Catalyst Atlanta. So,
and I ended up seeing you. Gosh, this was maybe 2 years ago now. I saw you in Athens, which is a little bit outside of Atlanta.
All right, yeah.
And that crowd was really—it was a good-sized crowd, and they were all digging it.
Man,
and then I saw you a year later in Asheville, which you know you'd think that it. And then it wasn't like that large of a crowd. So it was interesting.
No, there was like 12 people there.
But I was there, my friend, and it was great.
You've seen us with some of the biggest crowds ever and one of the smallest.
That's right. I like to say that I'm attributing to both of those numbers.
From ashes to Asheville.
Yeah.
We'll get to all of that. Let's start at the beginning. Let's just go with you. What were you up to before? I think you guys started in 2008 or 2009 or something like that. But talk about what you were up to before musically, and what kind of got you interested in starting what would soon to be called Seren.
Well, I had been exploring myself sonically for those first few years in college. I had left a long bout of being the lead singer in a like pop emo rock band.
Sure.
Yeah, I used to like straighten.
It was that time.
Yeah, there was a time. And I used to straighten my hair and learned a lot about being on stage and kind of developed, you know, presence in that time. And then for about 2 or 3 years, I kind of abandoned that scene and kind of went into self-exploration, and for a long time I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and I started dabbling with acoustic instruments, and I was in a band with a dear friend of mine for a little while where I started playing ukulele, and I ended up picking up and enjoying it so much that I started writing some songs on it. And I wrote a song called Of Dead Moreaus that ended up spurring my extremely talented roommate at the time, Nathan Allen, to decide, all right, let's maybe try this whole band thing out. And so we under the circumstance that we would find a female vocalist, decided we would start a band under that one pretense. And
why was that your one pretense?
It wasn't mine. It was really Nathan's. He he said, I'll start a band with you if I can find this person. And serendipitously, Chelsea Bohr, one of the founding members of the band, somehow got his phone number and called him 2 days later, said, hey, I'd like to come jam. I sing and play viola and would like to jam with you.
Huh.
What a thing.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That does
two days. What and a, you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and only what's even
were that easy.
What's even crazier is we happened to be I was down at South by Southwest and had gotten to Auditorium Shores early to go experience Explosions in the Sky for the first time. I was always a big fan. Nice. And so I got really close and was waiting there. Nathan called me and said, hey, man, I think I found someone to start our band with. I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. Yeah, she's going to be at the same show that you're at. I said, no kidding. And there was already, you know, several, probably tens of thousands of people there. And I said, what's she look like? And he describes her with blonde dreads, one with some red tips. And I swear to God, I was standing 10 feet away from her and walked up and she gave me an awkward look. And then we, by the end of the show, we were holding each other and laughing and crying and talking about taking over the world together.
That's so good. Did you walk up to her and say, you don't know this yet, but we're in a band together?
Yeah, no, legitimately. And she looked so confused. And then I told her, Nathan's my roommate. And she was like, oh, rad. Awesome. Yeah, let's go make some music.
It's so great. What a story.
Yeah, it was pretty insane.
Yeah, that's so funny. And so how long after meeting her and starting to jam did you guys say, let's see where this takes us. Let's maybe start playing some shows.
We booked our first show a month later.
Wow. Wasting no time.
Yeah, no time at all. And our second show was 2 weeks after that. Our very first show was at our Nathan and I's house where we lived together with two other best friends. And we just figured, hey, if we're going to tell the world that our band exists, we'll just throw the party. So we just got a bunch of friends to chip in, and we got a keg, and we just got the whole neighborhood to show up. So we had like 80 people crammed out of our living room and hanging out of windows and watching from the yard.
And was this in Texas too?
Yeah, this was in Denton, Texas.
Okay. Wow. Well, Texas likes to do it that way. So that's awesome. Was this something that you guys used the songs that you had already written? You mentioned earlier on the ukulele, you guys took those songs, and so you pretty much just showed the new folks the songs, and then you guys were ready to go after that, right?
Yeah, and so how it went down. In the very beginning, it was kind of everyone bringing different things to the table, and
And
so I had a few songs, Nathan had a few songs, we wrote a few songs together, and eventually those matured into full collaborations between the three of us, and but within a month or two did Chris Simmelbeck and Aaron Stoner join the band. It was very collaborative. And actually Aaron and Chris were both at our second show and were standing next to each other and both joked about joining the band. And when Chris showed up to his first practice, Aaron was there holding a bass, and he said, what are you doing here? He says, I'm in the band.
What a time. This is a good opening to a movie.
Yeah,
so
it really
far
is.
Yeah, so
you guys in the style that you guys adopted is is the folk style, which is a lot becoming more popular around this time, thanks to bands like Mumford and stuff like that. What inspired you guys to kind of go that route? Was it the fact that you guys had the instruments that you had, or did you guys all have a particular interest in doing something with that style of music?
I don't think any of us really cared that much to try to be any kind of style. We just, there was a banjo and there was a ukulele, and we initially, Nathan had a very strong idea about being a very acoustically driven band. That was the only pretense. It had nothing to do with style, but more so with just the aesthetic of being able to at any point put on a performance with or without a PA system. And so that was kind of the initial aesthetic. And then as we began moving into the recording cycle, preparing to record This Is Where We Are, we decided it might be appropriate to bring in electric instruments a little bit more here and there. Aaron originally played upright, and then we realized there was some songs where he should be playing an electric bass and there should be full drums, and we should be the song to serve the song. It was best to let it rock or jam. And, I think that was the biggest thing, was we weren't trying to be a folk band. We just wanted to serve the songs that we were writing the best that we could.
Yeah. So, you went and you recorded that first album, This Is Where We Are. It came out in 2011. So talk a little bit about making, this first album and what you guys were hoping, would come of that album. Did you have some high hopes? Did you guys feel like you were onto something, or were you just hoping to create something true to what you guys were doing in your spare time and practicing and stuff like that?
I mean, of course we wanted to be cool and make rad music, but I think we were all pretty true to ourselves. I mean, it was a pretty rigorous process, interpersonally. The whole history of the band has been lined with, tumultuous relationships between one another. And I think some of that push and pull, that gnashing of teeth kind of, heightened what we did with one another. It sharpened it, if anything. And, even going through that recording process, we went down to Ramble Creek Studios, and co-produced the record with Brenton Beisenherz, extremely talented, and just had a blast. I mean, it was our first time in like a real studio, but there was lots of fights and lots of dissension. We recorded one version of We Will All Be Changed and River Song, and we ended up going back and changing both of those versions and doing different versions. So out there in the ether is our different versions of those songs. At this point, we've recorded 5 or 6 different versions of We Will All Be Changed, 3 of which exist in the universe.
That's so funny. What, where does that kind of, disagreement come from? Does it come from you as a songwriter wanting to get the sound a certain way, or where does that come from in the band? Like, I feel like a lot of bands come together and they'd write the song and they're like, all right, this is the version, this is it. But you guys seem to work like this is, 6 years removed from that song, and you put out another version last year of that. So
yeah,
where does that come from?
A lot of that comes from the fact that Nathan and I are both pretty headstrong, and we exude our own different kinds of pride and ego when it comes to our art. And in a lot of ways they were just kind of on opposite sides of the spectrum. In a lot of ways we were kind of yin and yang, and there was both balance but tension in our relationship. And I think that kind of constantly was pushing us to challenge the songwriting process, to constantly make every little detail extremely important, that we didn't just want there to be needless noise going on. So, I mean, it contributed to very intentional music. I mean, everything that we did was either very intentional or very intentionally on accident. Like when things happen on accident, there was still like a level of intention going in about that. Sure. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I do want to talk about that song, We Will All Be Changed, a little bit. I feel like clearly that song means a lot to you guys and your willingness to re-record it quite a few years later. And I think it was the first song that people that I've heard you guys, that was one of the first ones they heard. Talk about that song a little bit and why it means so much to you guys and what you guys were trying to say in that song that you feel like you still want to say.
That was one of the first songs that Nathan and I wrote together. It was actually a guitar riff that I recorded with Nathan before we were even a band. It was February 14th, 2009, and we were both single dudes on Valentine's Day and decided, let's just have some beers and record some music. And so we captured that moment, and that eventually evolved into writing lyrics to the composition, and it eventually evolved with each member contributing their own strengths to it. And I think it was something that we really believed. We were all in a season of change, and you know, college is a time when every young man or woman is really going through a lot of different kinds of personal enlightenment and feeling like they're learning so much because all these different people from different places, not just kids from your city, your locale, but you know, people are coming from all over the state and in some cases from all over the country. And you know, University of North Texas had people from all over the world. And so you're experiencing all kinds of new culture, you're learning, you're growing, you're changing a lot. And so that song was very true to that season and continued to be true, just as we realized that no matter what season we were in, that just song never quite lost its effect. You know, there were seasons where we may have maybe not understood it or believed it as much as we had at one point. You know, after 7 years of playing a song, you can play it so many times that you kind of forget.
Right.
But I think over the years, like, it would take on different meanings, and sometimes it would take on entirely new meanings that felt fresh and more important than maybe even when it was written.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Absolutely. So you mentioned how you guys were pretty intentional with a lot of the songs and what you were trying to do. So once the album came out, you guys got some pretty good press from that, and that was when you had the opportunity to start touring. What was do you guys have as much of a as an intention with the band after that first album as what you wanted to do on tour? Like what kind of a band you wanted to be going forward? What kind of a message you wanted to have? Like, or and even kind of on a different level, what you guys were trying to accomplish, whether you were trying to make it in the music industry or whether you were trying, what was your kind of intention with the touring and going from the first album?
I mean, I think we just hopped on the road eager to play music in front of people as much as we could. And I don't think there was necessarily any agenda. I think as anyone hopping on the road would love to think, of course we wanted there to be a future, a career, an evolution.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think there's necessarily like one goal in mind at any given time. And in fact, from month to month, I think the vision, the idea would constantly be changing, constantly be evolving, both because of our evolving creativities and our evolving personalities and, our strengths, our weaknesses, all of those being constantly butt up against one another. And
right.
Sometimes we'd say, no, this song needs this. No, this song needs that. And for us, every performance is kind of like covering your own song. And a song is
right,
basically an idea. And the recording is just one version of that. And every night you get on stage is a chance to reinterpret that. And sometimes it's the same, sometimes it's different. And coming from a band who's had 10 different people in their lineup before, at times having 7 people on stage, there has been a lot of different changes. And these songs have all been performed so many different ways. And so really a lot of it was just had to do with adaptation, you know? And so we just hit the road and you're either made for the road or you're not. And you just either can continue adapting or you just get off the road.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Dave and I were in a small band.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Just listen, there's a reason for bringing this up. We're in a small band in Florida, and we would play, you know, local shows in Florida, and sometimes there'd be a good crowd and sometimes there wouldn't. And that'd be sometimes super encouraging and then also discouraging. But at the end of the day, we could still go home because we only play local shows.
Right.
I can only imagine what that's like being a band that's, I mean, you've got some traction, but you're still not super huge. So having days like I've seen you play really big shows, but I've also seen you play a show like we mentioned earlier with 12 people. Mm-hmm. Talk about kind of how you were able to process through that, like kind of the discouragement sometimes of maybe these shows. How were you able to still get on stage and play even when there were only 12? And talk a little bit about the joys versus the crappy times of the road as a band of your size.
I think it just had to do with always giving your best performance every single night. I mean, whether there were 12 people that showed up or 1,200, there were people who showed up expecting to hear the songs that they love. And so as an artist, like I would be doing an injustice to myself and an injustice to those people who have paid for a ticket, who are standing there waiting to hear a song that they're familiar with, if I didn't give it everything I had.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were nights when that was not easy. There were nights when the crowd was small or even less important than small. Less attentive.
Mm.
You know, I think it's a lot easier to play in front of 20 people who are just there with you than it is to play in front of 200 people who are chatting up a storm the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot easier to give yourself to an audience who's willing to give themselves.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's nights and tours that we'd come home from that just sucked. And I mean, yeah, you battled the depression, through the questions, the confusion. And then you just say, well, I'm either supposed to do this or not. So you either stop or keep going.
Yeah. It's so like, I was inspired as someone who tries to play shows and oftentimes is playing in those bar scenes where no one is listening. But I was inspired as I went to that show in Asheville and saw you guys you just went for it. And the 12 that were there watching were obviously with you, but there was also a group back in the bar that was, yeah, we're in this too now because of how much you guys were giving it. And I know that didn't happen all the time, but it is a testament to, man, like when you're witnessing somebody do something that they love, you almost have to pay attention for a little bit, and that's all you can really hope for.
On my knees, I can see where my heart needs to be. When this life gets to me, I'll be found on my knees.
But you kind of mentioned a little bit about how many people you've had in the band a little bit. And we see between like your first and your second album, you have a few lineup changes and you're putting out a couple singles here and there. So talk about what was going on in the life of the band at that point in time between album one and album two.
Man, I went through a really dry season creatively. And Ivory Black was the first song that I wrote after This Is Where We Are.
Yeah.
And it nearly broke the band. The band was nearly broken many times throughout its existence until we finally decided at the end of 2016 to let the band rest with the rest of that year and let it go with the past. But yeah, Yeah, I don't know. It was a good thing. That song was kind of like that make or break song, Ivory Black. It's like, you know, I'm still here. I'm not gone. I'm not dead. So just like, go, move forward. Don't stop.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that make or break moment of, this is one of those times where you either are done or you move forward. And, and it's weird because sometimes moving forward requires leaving something behind. And so through all those changes, a lot of that had to do with lineup changes and tension in the band and creative visions. And, that's honestly, anytime a song has been delayed in this group, it's probably because we were arguing over which way to perform and record the song.
Right.
Down to just this past October when we were trying to finish Mausoleum. And that ended up being decided that it would be the last song that we'd release. Yeah. Before going into indefinite hiatus. And a lot of that just, we've constantly been changing members and changing. It's been fascinating and learned a lot and heard a lot and loved a lot. But man, yeah, I have nothing but joy to looking back on all of that.
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
You talk about leaving things behind to go to new things. So that around right after this time with the lineup changes, when you guys, I don't know exactly who all relocated, but the band itself relocated to Nashville. What made you guys decide to do that? And do you find that it was a positive move?
Yeah, absolutely. We had talked about Nashville a few times and my wife and I had pretty much agreed that it wasn't right for us. And so the conversation got dropped, but about a year later, I remember waking up in the middle of the night and couldn't help but feel like I needed to leave Denton and we needed to get out. And so for some reason, Nashville started coming, popping back in my mind and no one was planting it there. And then my wife came to me about a week after those sleepless nights. And she just said, "Hey, listen, I either want to just buy a house and start having babies in the city, or we need to like go explore the world. We need to move somewhere else." Mm-hmm. And so I just said, "Okay, what about Nashville?"
You got to love when those moments happen.
Yeah. It's like, well, not babies, Nashville.
Right. So, So then the conversation struck back up and we all said, "All right, let's get out of here." And part of that was just that we felt like, you know, we had kind of done what we wanted to in North Texas. We will always be Texas kids. We love Texas.
Texas forever.
Yeah, man, it's the greatest country in the world.
It's the Lone Star State. The stars at night are big and bright there.
Yeah, they're the brightest, actually.
The brightest.
And So yeah, and I think it was a good move. We had six of us move there, plus my wife, and
also the whole band.
The whole band moved.
That's a big thing to do to accomplish.
Yeah, it was pretty insane, and it was good. We got here and we were all of a sudden just one of the all the other cool cats in this city trying to make tunes for a living. And
such an interesting
no longer
city.
The
yeah it really
no
is.
Longer the Lone Stars.
No just yeah, we were just one star and one tiny little small star in a sea of the night sky.
That's a fun thing.
But
that's actually cool though, because when if I was to move, because I've only done one time in my life where I've moved kind of completely away from where I lived and I did it alone, but to imagine having like six of my friends do it with me, it seems like it would be a lot more fun and easier to do.
Yeah, it was definitely helpful to the overall process. You know, you didn't feel completely alone in the world, and we had a lot of friends here already. Nashville was a fun city that we already loved visiting because we already had friends here, people who, you know, at the time our management at that time was based in Nashville. Our booking agency was based in Nashville, so we were coming into good company, right. And mm-hmm. And so, but I mean, we had told ourselves whether or not when we moved to Nashville, we said it will either make or break the band eventually,
right?
And no matter which one happens, we just have to trust that it's the right thing,
right?
You know, going there, it's like if it breaks, then we were meant to break. And if it makes, then that was the right move. Right. But either way, like we can't look back and say it was the wrong move, because if we just hadn't moved to Nashville, then maybe we'd still be together. Like that's futile thinking.
Right. Sure. I went to Nashville for the first time a couple years ago. And was just astounded. Like we were walking, my wife and I were walking downtown, and it was like 9 a.m. and the bars were open with country music. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing in the entire world.
Yeah.
And then we had Hattie B's hot chicken, and it was the best thing that I've ever put in my mouth. It was astounding.
Man. Oh, boy.
I love hot chicken.
Man, so good. Like I've thought about moving there only for that reason.
A lot of people do, actually.
Because KFC, I don't know if you've heard, Kentucky Fried Chicken said, oh, we'll do Nashville Hot Chicken. And
yeah,
I was like,
don't believe that.
I'll give it a try.
Mm-mm, KFC. Not even close.
And no, they're liars.
It was so gross. It was
liars.
Awful. Made me angry. But I'll be back soon for real stuff.
Yeah, you should. You definitely should.
Is there a better hot chicken than Hattie B's? Have you had Hattie B's? I'm sure you have.
Oh, of course I have.
Right. Yeah. Right. Is there anywhere better than Hattie B's?
I mean, Prince's is pretty bomb. Prince's is considered to be maybe the original. And if you think you can handle hot there, you should just get medium. Because everything there is hotter.
Right. Yeah, I think that's
their hottest, that's the way they do life. Yeah. I'm certain that if I got the hottest one they make, like I would have a heart attack and keel over on the spot.
I'm sure that has definitely happened to somebody.
I honestly would not be surprised.
Right.
What a way to commit suicide, right? By delicious heat.
Well, you know the story behind hot chicken, right?
I've never heard the story behind hot chicken.
Well, apparently there was a not so faithful husband and a rather vindictive wife who found out and decided that she would try to kill her husband by making the hottest chicken in the world. And she said, "Let me cook dinner for you." And he says,
"For bringing the accents in."
Oh yeah, and he was a little skeptical, but he took a bite, and his eyes got big, and sweat started pouring down his forehead, and he goes, "This is the best damn thing I ever had."
That's fantastic.
That's the story. So the follow up question to that is whether you'd be starting your own podcast doing storytelling, because that's what I would love.
Oh man,
you're in the wrong
story time with Seren.
Listen, you know, like the world is a strange place, and I'm like oddly a private person. I'm trying to figure out this thing. Like now, as I'm venturing into the season of my life where I'm starting to do my own music and go solo and have my own project. And I'm trying to sit here and go, people want me to like post pictures of me regularly on Instagram and like tell them what I'm thinking on a daily basis on Twitter and like share with them articles I think that are fascinating on Facebook. And it's like I'm having to dig into some like deep corners of my soul to go, all right, let's figure out how to do this. Let alone, I can't imagine having my own podcast. Maybe it would be easier just to like have like some sort of regimen. you know?
Well,
or like,
the thing that Dave and I do is we don't tell any of our own personal things. We try to get people to share their own personal stuff so that we don't have to.
Right.
It's, okay. All right. That
that's
works.
The way to do
but
it.
But that being said, Bran, we do run into each other on this one. The social media,
right? I think social media is great, and Dave hates it. So
it's hard. It's hard. Some people are just made for it.
I know, I was made for it, Dave. I'm jealous of it.
Like, yeah,
my
yeah.
girlfriend's made for it too. She's like, she's just so much better at it, and that's why I tell her. She thinks it's like a diss. I'm like, no, I'm serious. Like, I don't even have any idea how to just not feel like an idiot when I post anything.
It's like some people just like, they're like, oh, there's some great light coming in through the window right now. I'm going to take a picture of that and post it to Facebook or Instagram. And everyone's like, oh my gosh.
With a little CS, with a C.S. Lewis quote.
Right.
I promise you, I took a picture of light going through a window today.
No, yeah. No, seriously. And then people are like, oh my gosh, look at the floors in this coffee shop. I'm going to take a picture of that. Like, I don't notice that. I don't think when I'm in a coffee shop, I'm just loving the cup of coffee. Maybe I should take a picture of the cup of coffee. Maybe I just need to take pictures of what I see, because I think that's what people care about, is how you see the world, right? That's what social media is about.
Right. Well, here's what I'm asking. I want to hear you describe the cup of coffee, because you have a gift for describing things. You described the way the chicken was made, and it was, I'm hungry for it. So you could make that, or commercials.
Yeah.
Because if you can make me want hot chicken that fast, maybe you can make the world want cars.
But no one needs more cars.
Yeah, no one needs cars. I do love my truck, though.
Everyone loves a good. That's the Texas side of you, right there.
Yeah, but it's not a big truck. I just got a Toyota T100. Okay, it's not a fancy truck. It's not a big truck. It's just the best truck in the world.
It's enough.
It's nothing crazy. Just the best.
Yes. Before I swear we're going to get back to it, but your story about the hot chicken made me think of this news story I saw today, and it's the best thing I've heard in a long time. This guy robbed a bank, and he's just sat there. He robbed it, and then he sat there, and police came, and he's
in the bank.
Yeah, he just sat in the bank. And
okay.
Police came, and they said, "Are you the guy?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm the guy." And they said, "Why did you do this?" And he said, "I wanted to get away from my wife. Please arrest me and give me the maximum sentence."
That's
true story,
brutal.
Boy.
Real
brutal.
Story. BBC, they tell the truth.
Man.
So don't do that.
Did he technically steal it yet, though? Because if he was still in the bank, he's just kind of like playing with it.
Yeah, he still committed the crime. Like,
yeah. And I love.
But like, but the thing about it, if I took your guitar, Brandon, from your room and I was still in your house, would you say he stole? Anyways.
See, the ultimate punishment there would be if they just decided, hey, listen, right, you're not going to jail. Instead, we're going to put a sensor on your ankle, and you are going to be house arrested with your wife.
Ooh, that's the one.
You got to stay there.
Here's your punishment.
The best detail of the story is that he chose the closest bank to the police station. Like, it's on the same block, like just a couple buildings down. He said, let's just make this as fast as possible.
This is a real story.
It's
too,
a real story. I'll send you the link later.
Huh.
Anywho.
Yeah, let's have
hey,
it.
Hey,
she must have been a really nasty wife, or he was just a really pathetic husband.
I think it could probably be a little of both. There's always
short-sighted.
There's always two sides of the story. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Mm. You want us to talk about the band again, or we can just keep talking about this? This is fine too.
I mean, hot chicken and bank robbing are like my two favorite things.
There you go. We'll go to the third favorite thing, which is music, and then we'll talk more afterwards. But talking, there's no way to segue back, so we're doing it anyways. You mentioned that you were kind of in this dry spell creatively. Did Nashville help kind of kick you out of that a little bit and help you start writing what would end up being Shadow Show?
Well, Shadow Show's we had actually written before we got to Nashville. We had already written that and finished it. And then we got to Nashville and wrestled with management to try to decide on a release date. And we wanted to release it early, but we gave it time to shop. And so by the time it came out, we had been sitting on that for like 2 years. And so it was actually kind of a beatdown for us. Like, because we were pretty close to releasing it, but then we gave them some time. But then by the time the ball was back in our court, we didn't have our ducks in a row. So it was just like, it was a big mess. And
yeah,
And so by the time they came out, we had finished writing those songs 2 years before. So we were already like ready to write a third record before the second record came out.
Oh my gosh.
And so, you know,
that
was a beatdown. We got here, we released the record. 2 months after we released the record, both the girls in the band quit. And so that left us four dudes to basically just be a four-piece dude rock band playing Seren songs the best that we could. And
there's
in every
some
way.
Good girl harmonies and some Seren songs.
Yeah, I mean, some of the songs were designed around the female voice being featured.
Right.
And so that was kind of like, it's kind of a bust to our butts, you know? And
right.
There just wasn't anything we could do about it.
Did you try to find another female? Or
At that point, we just said, rather than trying to just replace, let it grow us personally. And so we all just like, Nathan stepped up and started working on his vocals. I had to start playing and covering more guitar parts and banjo parts. And so we just basically figured out how to expand within versus expand outward.
Right. Yeah, that's difficult, especially like songs like Disappear that are so like, it's like this beautiful back and forth. And
yeah, when those girls quit, the first version that we tried to do as a four-piece dude band just sounded like country butt rock. And so we were kind of like, you know what, let's just not play this one for a little bit until we can figure it out.
Right. That's so funny. That album sonically is a little bit differently. There's almost seems a little like there's a little bit more atmosphere to it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So talk about how you guys were trying to grow musically with that sound. Granted, it was quite a few years in between, so there's a lot of evolving that's going to happen naturally, but were you guys intentionally trying to just, you said you were intentional, but were you intentionally trying to just add a little bit of something that maybe the first album was missing, or were you hoping to do there musically?
Yes and no. I know that wasn't a yes or no question, but
you made it one.
Yeah. But we kind of looked at that whole situation and we just said, we wanted to expand. We wanted to be able to maintain some of the elements, but we also wanted the bigger to be bigger and the little to be smaller.
Sure.
And so I think we wanted to just even further express those dynamics and dig deeper into the different kind of sonic territories. And especially because we spent so much time playing those songs live before we recorded it, that by the time we went to the recording studio, most of them had been worked out, and it was just kind of like figuring out details. And so we had spent a lot of time like rehearsing these songs, and we had already been playing them live before we even went into the studio. And then after we finished recording it, we played it more and more. So by the time that even the record came out, we were already kind of playing different versions,
right?
You know, because we had already figured out better ways to play what we had written.
Yeah.
So
that's what happened with Disappear, I'm guessing, between single version and album version.
Yeah. Well, and part of that was just time, you know, like the whole radio version thing is kind of like sometimes weird, and I get it, but people just don't want long songs on the radio.
But I gotta be honest, man, I still listen to the single version. Like I think I listened to it for so long, I just couldn't do it. Like I got to the album version, I'm like, I just need a little bit more.
Yeah. It's kind of a catch-22. Like, you know, like you put out one version and generally people just have their favorite version. I mean, like a lot of times whenever a band puts out an EP and they've got a rough, raw version of one song and they put out a record and it's nice and polished, like I find myself going back to the one that I first encountered, the one that drew me to the song, that by the time I hear a new, more polished, different mastered song, I'm like, nah, this is not the one. It might be, the production might be better. The guitar solo might be slicker. But like his voice didn't crack on that one part of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just like little details like that.
Yeah.
Capture
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. So. I was listening to a podcast called Song Exploder, and they were talking with the Lumineers, and they were talking about that Ophelia song, and he was talking about how they recorded this part of the song where it sounds like his mic is overdriving, but it's not. It's actually just his voice hitting like the very top of his register. And the first few times they heard it, they were like, "We got to re-record it." But then they grew to like it so much that they were like, "All right, let's just leave it in." And so, like, just kind of those moments that are kind of like that make music music. Like, it's not perfect all the time. Is kind of just this interesting thing that I think we are a little bit drawn to, like hearing the imperfections in the music is almost like, oh, that's kind of cool how that sounds, even though it's not maybe perfect. So
just, we had a phrase for that in the studio in the creative process. We always said, you can't pay for mistakes like that. You can hire the best producers in the world. You can be the best musicians, but sometimes just accidents are meant to happen. Yeah, and sometimes they're just what's right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I have one follow up. I pre-ordered the vinyl. And I have it now, and it's beautiful. It's probably my favorite vinyl that
I did. It take a year for you to get it?
Yeah, that's my question. What in the world, man? Like I've been listening to this album now for a while, and all I want is my darn aqua blue vinyl.
That is,
oh yeah,
it's nowhere to be found.
It is
of a bee.
Yeah, it's one of the. It's one of the things that people don't really see when you're talking about an independent artist. Like we praise the idea of an artist being independent, but it's not easy because the people who have the record labels, especially the big ones, the only thing that they're expected to do is to write the songs. I mean, I'm not trying to dumb it down too much. There's more to it, but you know, we were our own tour managers. We ran and got our own coffee. We ordered our own food for dinner. And, you know, we wiped our own butts. and
Lord, I hope no one has someone doing that for them.
But we did our...
Donald! Just kidding.
We did our own... Like, we had to do our own websites. And we did our own... Like we would hire out like friends or professionals for design work. And there were certain, you know, like mixing and mastering and engineering records. Like we would source a lot of those things out. But, you know, there's things like when we set up the pre-order system and we set up our fulfillment system, like we had to do that. We sat around for 3 days. I had to redesign the whole website for 3 days to set up for the pre-order. Mm-hmm. And then once it came time to be done and released, and we also had like 100 hangups with the vinyl pressing company. They were supposed to be done this month. Then they come back and they say, hey, there's a glitch in the system. Hey, then there's a scratch here. Hey, the masters, we have to redo the master because there's an error in it now. And so there was a bunch of things that were out of our control. And then once it was in our control, once we finally had the product, we were sitting there ready to ship them. And we sat there for 8 hours and shoved vinyls in boxes and CDs in boxes and shirts in bags and printed off labels and shoved them on the boxes and drove them to the unit, you know, the postal service. And when we were just figuring it out, we had to buy like 500 stamps to get everything shipped because we thought we could do it through a different service.
Right.
And it was just a big mess. And yeah, I mean, it was a big learning thing for us. Like in the future, I don't think any one of us would want to do our own fulfillment. It's just, you know, there's people who specialize in it, and you know what? It's tough. Some people have the organization to do it. We weren't those people. And so to any of those people, including yourself, you know, it's like, we apologize. Like that was our bad. Like, and we're sorry that had to happen, but that's kind of like a casualty of being an independent band. You know, when you're playing, when you're wearing all the hats.
Right. I'm not actually that mad about it. I just think it's so pretty, and I hate that I lived so long without it.
Yeah.
It's so darn pretty. It's such a good vinyl. It's so pretty.
I'm so glad.
That's awesome. You've hinted at this earlier about the kind of where you guys are right now with the hiatus, but can you talk about what happened in between Shadow Show and what led up to this now decision to let it be yet another, like you said, casualty of 2016 is this beautiful band?
Yeah. So the record came out, we toured it, and then we spent most of 2015 writing. We had some connections. We had started talking with an A&R rep who started setting up some good songwriting sessions with some pretty notable songwriters from some pretty good, from some pretty great bands. And
can you share who they are or no?
Yeah. I mean, we worked with the keyboardist from Band of Horses, and we worked with the ex-guitarist for Cage the Elephant, and so, and turned out some really, really rad songs. And
nice. Cool.
And yeah, so they were setting up co-writes, and Nathan and I were going and working with these guys, and he and I were writing a lot of songs, and we were kind of gearing up. We're building momentum, but like we weren't quite putting our foot down and like getting something done. And around the same time, we were struggling with management. We ended up firing them. We kind of cleaned the slate. Mm. We lost management. We let go of our legal team. And so we were, again, like dealing with even more hats. And so we are kind of in that whole territory of like, well, did we find new management? Did we not? And then at the end of 2015, we were on the verge of breaking up. And we then, a month and a half later, after kind of sitting on it for a while, decided not to. And we more intensely pursued this this relationship with this small new record label who was interested in us. They set us up with some pretty fantastic producers, but the results that they put out and the contracts that we received from them were just not favorable. We didn't like the result. We didn't like the terms. We were really unsatisfied with it. And so at that point, we kind of just, it was just kind of like we abandoned that ship. And so it was just like the few of us straggling, like the four dudes on a life raft, just trying to figure out, okay, now how do we make this happen again? And there was a few different ways that I think it could have worked, but I think ultimately, I think it was just time, like, for it was, I mean, just to go along with this analogy further, like it was time for us to sink or swim. Right. And we just, I think it was at the end of all that ordeal and trying one last time to get through the recording process with one another, we said, you know, this is time. And so we just happened to, when we decided to swim, we just happened to swim in different directions. Hmm. And so I don't necessarily think of, you know, maybe Seren sunk, but I would say that we're all swimming now, and we're just all moving in different directions. And so I know everyone is really excited about, more excited now about what's to come than what could have been.
Sure.
And so, you know, of course there's a bittersweet element of saying, you know, yeah, like we worked our asses off for a long time to try to make something happen. And it did, it really did. Like things happen, and I'm in a better place today with more opportunity than I would have been without this band, you know? Right. And so I'm in a whole new place, a new territory, like trying to figure out exactly what is next. Like I know what's next, but I'm just like trying to materialize it now. And it's honestly scary. It's nerve-wracking, but But I'm so much more excited than I was 3 months ago when we were trying to figure out how to keep this thing from just sinking.
Yeah.
And I think we just realized that we just stopped. We just needed to let go of one another.
Sure. You guys have thrown out kind of that indefinite hiatus term, which some might say, so you're saying there's a chance.
One in a million.
Is that one of those things like where you just threw that word out there just in case, because you don't want to be one of those guys that said, we're breaking up, oh, we're back together? Or is that seriously something you guys have been like, well, this time next year, we'll talk about it again or something like that?
You know, it is what it is. I don't think there's any talk or plan. I think we all have to entirely let it go like it's done.
Right.
And I think if anything, like, I think every single one of us believe that there's a high probability that nothing ever will happen with Seren again. There was even conversation, like, I was kind of in a position where I could have maintained Seren myself. Like, I could have gone on as Seren.
Yeah.
Like, I basically, like, that was something I could have done with the permission granted by the other two remaining founding members of the band, Nathan and Aaron. But it just didn't feel right. Like, I felt like if I was going to move on, like, I may have an existing fan base and an existing following and have, like, things together. But it was just, if I was going to do something by myself, it was time to start from scratch and just know that whatever I was building, could be me 100%, because Seren was never one person ever. It was always a collaboration. And so I wanted something that I knew could be me, and Seren will always be those guys.
Yeah.
Not sure. Not me, not Nathan, not Aaron. It was we.
Right.
Well, you mentioned that everybody is swimming in their different directions and that there's kind of a more excitement about what is to come than what could have been. And I don't know how much you can say about what the rest of the members are doing, but you mentioned that you are now doing your own thing. So can you talk about what that's like right now or what's kind of on the horizon for you?
Yeah, I mean, having come out of Seren, like, I've got a lot of songs that we had written together that a lot of those songs I will eventually release under my new project. And so, I mean, I've got a lot of songs. I just am in the process of starting to record them. So here in the next month or two, I'm planning on putting something out for the first time. So,
hey-o.
Yeah, I've decided on a name. Actually, my Native American name is Owl Top Knot Feather. So I'm going to go by the moniker Top Knot.
That's fantastic. That's the best name.
Thank you. Thank you.
Gosh. And Top Knot.
So I am Top Knot. And and so I've got a bunch of tunes that I've been swirling around for a long time and still readily writing pretty consistently. And so just in the whirlwind of the band played their last show. Seren played their last show December 29th. On 2000 of 2016. And so, not even a month after, resettling into the new year, kind of like gutting our lives and preparing for the next step so that I can kind of go into full production mode. And so I don't really have a definite plan right now or timeline for, any full length releases, but I definitely do plan on as quickly as possible getting some songs for people to hear. So, yeah.
Cool.
Sweet. Well, do us all a favor and don't get in an argument with somebody in the management side and end up waiting 2 years to release.
No. It's just me in charge right now. The only arguments I have are with myself, and which is pretty frequent, but I generally can get past those ones a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Maybe tell yourself to speed it up a little bit for the sake.
I've been slapping my hand on that one.
Right. Well, man, thank you so much for chatting with us. I know I can speak for myself just because I've been, I feel like I've been with you since the beginning of Seren. And just how
man,
much
but in a lot of ways you have been.
Right. But I mean, your music has meant a lot to me over the years. I mean, even up till it was New Year's Day and I'm in New York City and I'm trying to get back to Greenville, South Carolina, and my flight gets canceled with no plans to reschedule. And I'm like, son of a gun. And so I had to rent a car and drive home, and I was in an awful mood, and I put on Shadow Show, and I'm like, you know what? Everything's okay. So thanks for making everything okay, because sometimes everything's not okay. Like yeah. Driving
from a shit show to a Shadow Show.
Absolutely.
Man, well, I appreciate you saying that, and I hope that that there will be many more songs like that to help be a part of your life, your day, good times, your bad times.
I mean, I hope I don't get, absolutely. I hope my flight doesn't get canceled again, but.
No, but I yeah. do understand. Either way, I hope to Wait. Add to that soundtrack.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
I think for better or for worse. Well, can you give us kind of like basically plugs on where that people can expect to see this music released or where they can look you up and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. When's this podcast go out?
Good question. We had an interview yesterday, kind of. It happened really fast. So it depends on if we put this one out next Monday or after that. That doesn't answer anything
okay.
to you. So we can push it further if that's helpful to you.
No. I mean, so here, I haven't actually officially announced it. So you guys are kind of getting some of the like early dig. But
yes. Hey, yeah. Top Knot dig.
Yeah. So everything is going to be I Am Top Knot. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at I Am Top Knot, and the website will be iamtopknot.com. And so, and when
have you already secured those?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I was gonna get them real quick and just make a crap ton of money.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I would not have indulged that information if it weren't for sure. So,
you're a smart man,
yeah. So, that's where you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and and then as soon as the music comes out, it'll be coming out everywhere that you can hear music. You can expect it on iTunes and Spotify. So
perfect.
Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, man. Wait, Dave, what?
No, I was just agreeing.
Okay.
Agreeing with the chicken, with the music, with the Top Knot, with it all.
Yep. This and was, the bank robbing.
This was maybe the most scattered we've ever been in. I think that's for the best. I think we're really going to take off.
I'm real proud of you guys.
Thank you. It means a lot.
Thank you. Thanks so much for chatting. That was awesome. Thank you so much.
We leave you with the newest and maybe the last Seren song, Mausoleum. Thanks for listening to Your Favorite Band Podcast. Go check out Seren. Have a great week.
Finally made. Without a clue where I am, with all of the holes in my pockets, maybe I still got a chance. When the sun sets a little bit sooner, my appetite grows pretty thin. Can you see a little bit further from the last place I've been? And no, I don't have forever. You know. faster. The older and older I get. But time is a clever invention. We are helplessly participant. And though I don't have forever, you know I don't need that love. Well, you know you've got that soul, my brother. Why are you trying to hide? And the heart is a beast that'll keep you bleeding. Learn to let it lie in the walls of a mausoleum. In the the mausoleum, and we're all just trying to reach the other side.